The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
If you didn't get a chance to see last night's debate, we've just picked one extract to start for you, which is illuminating of the whole thing. And even if you did see it earlier, I think you might enjoy this bit again to hear it, because this goes from everything from the size of rallies and the people attending it to those migrants allegedly eating pets.
And I'm going to actually do something really unusual, and I'm going to invite you to attend one of Donald Trump's rallies, because it's a really interesting thing to watch. You will see during the course of his rallies, he talks about fictional characters like Hannibal Lecter. He will talk about windmills cause cancer. And what you will also notice is that people start leaving his rallies early out of exhaustion and boredom. And I will tell you, the one thing you will not hear him talk about is you. You will not hear him talk about your needs, your dreams, and your desires. And I'll tell you, I believe you deserve a president who actually puts you first. And I pledge to you that I will.
Vice President Harris, thank you. President Trump, on that point, I want to get your response.
Well, I would like to respond.
Let me just ask, though, why did you try to kill that bill, and successfully so? That would have put thousands of additional agents and officers on the border.
First, let me respond as to the rallies. She said people start leaving. People don't go to her rallies. There's no reason to go. And the people that do go, she's busing them in and paying them to be there and then showing them in a different light. So she can't talk about that. People don't leave my rallies. We have the biggest rallies, the most incredible rallies in the history of politics. That's because people want to take their country back. Our country is being lost. We're a failing nation. And it happened 3.5 years ago. And what's going on here, you're going to end up in World War III, just to go into another subject. What they have done to our country by allowing these millions and millions of people to come into our country, and look at what's happening to the towns all over the United States. And a lot of towns don't want to talk. It's not going to be Aurora or Springfield. A lot of towns don't want to talk about it because they're so embarrassed by it. In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there. And this is what's happening in our country. And it's a shame. As far as rallies are concerned, as far as the reason they go is they like what I say. They want to bring our country back. They want to make America great again. It's a very simple phrase, make America great again. She's destroying this country. And if she becomes president, this country doesn't have a chance of success. Not only success, we'll end up being Venezuela on steroids.
I just want to clarify here. You bring up Springfield, Ohio, and ABC News did reach out to the city manager there. He told us there have been no credible reports of specific claims of pets being harmed, injured, or abused by individuals within the immigrant community.
Well, I've seen people on television.
Let me just say here, this is the
people on television say my dog was taken and used for food. So maybe he said that, and maybe that's a good thing to say for a city manager.
I'm not taking this from television.
But the people are on television saying their dog was eaten by the people that went there.
Again, the Springfield city manager says there's no evidence of that. Vice President Harris, I'll let you respond to the rest of what you've heard.
You talk about extreme. I think one of the reasons why in this election, I actually have the endorsement of 200 Republicans who have formerly worked with President Bush, Mitt Romney, and John McCain, including the endorsement of former Vice President Dick Cheney and Congress member Liz Cheney. And if you want to really know the inside track on who the former president is, if he didn't make it clear already, just ask people who have worked with him. His former chief of staff, a four-star general, has said he has contempt for the Constitution of the United States. His former national security advisor has said he is dangerous and unfit. His former Secretary of Defense has said the nation, the Republic, would never survive another Trump term. And when we listen to this kind of rhetoric, when the issues that affect the American people are not being addressed, I think the choice is clear in this election.
Okay, that's just an extract from what was an extraordinary 90 minutes, in which Donald Trump got to speak for 6 extra minutes because he kept butting his way back in and the moderators didn't stop him. Your overall assessment, Marion McKeown, of what we saw last night?
Yeah, you know, I think that undeniably Kamala Harris is, I think, the first person he's ever come up against on a stage who really put him in his place and kept him there consistently. I think he just did not know how to cope with her. And you heard the spluttering rage when he erupted into this, which we'd already spoken about yesterday, I think, this nonsense about Haitian immigrants who are legally in Springfield, Ohio. They all have work permits. They're all there legally, eating pets, stealing their neighbor's pets and eating them. It was categorically, you know, refuted by the city authorities and the police, and yet he just cannot help himself. He has to go for the most sensational. And you could see when you were watching the debate, and I'm sure you were watching it, Matt, in real time, when she said about the rally numbers, about people leaving because they were exhausted and bored, his eyes just shot up. You could see that was so deliberate. She walked him straight into that. From the beginning, she was a prosecutor, even going so far as to say that what she was going to say, and she laid out her stall, but then she also laid out his and said, you will hear from my opponent lies and grievances and nonsense, basically. And that's exactly what he did for so much of the debate. Now, she skirted some questions herself. She didn't answer some questions. She didn't have a perfect night. But I think it was the first time that people saw the bully that Donald Trump is being categorically taken down. And I think he was stunned. And we heard one of the most disgraceful things he said was when David Muir, one of the moderators, and I think the moderators did an excellent job, asked him about his comments about Kamala Harris's race. And he went on, and then he said he read that she wasn't black. And then he said, and that she put out. I'll say that. Now, for a presidential candidate to say that about his opponent, who is a woman, it's just mind-boggling. It's not something that was picked up, I think, by any of the American media, but that was the level of his discourse. And she was just on a different level too. And I think that was very, very clear. Whether or not that will advance her in the campaign, we don't know, because things are so tight. But it was her night.
Larry Donnelly, your initial assessment of what happened?
Yeah, I agree with much of what Marion has said. I think there were two big questions before this debate. One was, could Harris rise to the occasion? I think the answer to that is a clear yes. The second was, could Trump recapture that sense of restraint that he seemed to have in the first debate with Joe Biden, and indeed that he kept as the controversy over Biden's stature and standing unfolded? Could he get that back? And the answer to that question was clearly no. I think Harris wasn't great, but she was good. And I think it started right from the beginning. Even before the discourse started, she knocked him off balance when she marched right over to him and said, I'm Kamala Harris, and put out her hand. Remember, there had been a lot of discussion as to whether they would actually shake hands. She went right into his space. And I think from that moment on, he was on the back foot in many ways. I think she couched things exceptionally well. She led with issues that would affect the middle class and middle income people before she got to cultural issues and other things. I think that was very, very wise. Whereas on the other hand, Trump has huge advantages on inflation and immigration, but he was so ranting and raving and undisciplined and really, really inarticulate that the points he was making failed to land. If I were him, I would have started off the debate by channeling Ronald Reagan in 1980 and said to the American people, simply put, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And he has a big advantage when it comes to that topic. But he just couldn't do it because, again, he was all over the place. And even on the issue of immigration, if he were to say, look, cities and towns are being overrun, they're crippled by the number of people, we can't take anymore, we need to do something about this, Harris and Biden have failed us in that regard, without going into, you know, dogs and cats and all this other nonsense, he would have succeeded. But the big problem here is that Trump all too often thinks he's speaking at a rally, and all he needs to convince to win an election are the people who go to his rallies. Last night, he did absolutely nothing to expand his base.
But he wouldn't have lost any of his support, Larry. Isn't that the point? They're wedded to him. They believe that he's almost a god. They will not even concede that he was bad last night.
Oh, 100%. You know, and well, you know what their arguments since have been were that the moderators were horribly biased. I think they have a point to an extent on that one.
Why? For fact-checking him, for actually calling him out on his lies. There were lots of lies that he wasn't called up on.
I absolutely think that's absolutely fair. But they did call him out, and they did that correct. They were right to do so. But Harris really got, in my view, a free pass when she was asked the question about her flip-flops. And they're quite dramatic, especially if we look at the ACLU questionnaire she answered in 2019 versus where she is now. She responded to that question by talking about her middle-class upbringing and a friend of hers who was very sadly sexually assaulted. She didn't go near any of the substantive issues, and they didn't follow that up with her, and I really think that they failed in that regard. I agree that they largely did a decent job, but I think that Trump's acolytes have a point on that one. But at the end of the day, they only have to look in the mirror. The guy who screwed this up was not Peter Muir or the other moderator. The person who screwed this up was Donald Trump.
Marion, you travel around the United States extensively, and you talk to all sorts of people. It really comes across in your reporting for the Business Post. You're not talking to elites or insiders, you talk to ordinary people all the time. What do you think they would make of the complete negativity of Donald Trump? This belief that everything is terrible, everything is the worst, that we're facing the possibility of World War III. Is that really the way the American people think, that everything is going to hell in a handcart and only he can be their savior?
No, but I think he does have an advantage that he hasn't, he certainly didn't use last night, in that people really do believe in America, everybody that I speak to, Democrats and Republicans, that the cost of living is unsustainable, that the America that they thought they were growing up in largely doesn't exist anymore, that they can't buy houses, that they can't afford insurance for their houses, even if they can buy them. You know, climate change is causing more floods, more fires in a lot of areas, and they're making decisions to risk it, you know, and that's something that's come up over and over. Things like healthcare seem to have gotten better for them, that they feel that it's more affordable now, but it's the overall stuff, it's the cost of living, it's going to the supermarket, it's filling up the tank in the car, and they are not happy at the moment, by and large, Americans. They're also frustrated by, I think, the discourse, the level of ugliness, but when I speak to Trump people, there is no budging away from Trump. They are ever more committed to Trump, more than they were in 2016, more than they were in 2020. And then most of them do believe that the election was stolen from him. A lot of them are really buying into all this talk of the culture wars, the transgenders. They are believing what Trump and Vance are saying, that basically kids are being taken out of classes and given gender-changing surgery in their lunchtimes. You know, I mean, all of this stuff is in the Trump world, this is all being digested and it's being accepted. There is a sway, though, and let's not forget in the primaries, the Nikki Haley voters, that was about 20 to 30% of Republicans who had enough of all this. They were sick of Trump's lies. They were sick of the division. They didn't trust him in particular on foreign policy. And we heard him talk about Ukraine last night, where he refused to say when pressed that he wanted Ukraine to even win this war, Ukraine to remain a sovereign state, which was really worrying. So I think that there are some people who are ambivalent Republicans and independents, whether or not, though, they will trust Kamala Harris to fix the economy. But the signs are getting better. Inflation is coming down. There's going to be an interest rate cut. Whether it'll come in time for people to say, let's take a punt on her. But Americans are a country of change. And right now, even though she's a vice president, even though she's an incumbent to a degree, she looks a lot more like change than Donald Trump.
Here's further highlights from last night's 90-minute debate between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump, which includes Harris introducing herself to Trump, statements on each other's legacies, gun control, Harris's ethnicity and Ukrainian war, and Trump's closing statement.
Kamala Harris, let's have a good debate.
Nice to see you. Have fun.
Thank you. Donald Trump left us the worst unemployment since the Great Depression. Donald Trump left us the worst public health epidemic in a century. Donald Trump left us the worst attack on our democracy since the Civil War. And what we have done is clean up Donald Trump's mess.
We have inflation like very few people have ever seen before, probably the worst in our nation's history. On top of that, we have millions of people pouring into our country from prisons and jails, from mental institutions and insane asylums, and they're coming in and they're taking jobs that are occupied right now by African Americans and Hispanics. She has a plan to confiscate everybody's gun.
Then this business about taking everyone's guns away. Tim Walz and I are both gun owners. We're not taking anybody's guns away. So stop with the continuous lying about this stuff.
Well, I don't know. I mean, all I can say is I read where she was not black, that she put out, and I'll say that. And then I read that she was black.
I mean, honestly, I think it's just a tragedy that we have someone who wants to be president who has consistently, over the course of his career, attempted to use race to divide the American people.
They sent her to negotiate peace before this war started. 3 days later, he went in and he started the war.
If Donald Trump were president, Putin would be sitting in Kyiv right now.
She's been there for 3.5 years. They've had 3.5 years to fix the border. They've had 3.5 years to create jobs and all the things we talked about. Why hasn't she done it?
Okay, so Larry Donnelly, lots of lies there from Donald Trump, particularly, I mean, inflation has been higher before. Are there millions upon millions pouring in from insane asylums and the like?
No, I mean, as usual, his approach was hyperbolic. And again, it goes back to the point that that stuff works at rallies. It doesn't really convince the people who he needs to get on side to win this thing. Obviously, he hasn't lost the base there with him, but there are some he needs to attract to his side. And that's why I think last night was a bad night for him. He didn't do anything to win them over. The last clip you played there it was from his closing statement where he said, look, they've had 3.5 years to do something. They've done nothing. That may have been his highest or strongest point in the course of the debate by saying, look, immigration, inflation, too far left, and pointing at that record, pointing at the general unpopularity of the Biden-Harris administration, something she can't divorce herself from. If he had been disciplined and on message and not so hyperbolic and over the top, he would have had a much, much better night. And even indeed, after delivering that effective line at the start of his closing statement, he launched into a really dystopian description of America and Americans, one that I don't think is shared by those people who he needs to convince to get on side. Some of his disciples might see things that way, and that might inspire them, but it doesn't work for anyone else.
Mary McCune, he continued to make false claims about the that he won the last election and that it was robbed from him, and he visibly bridled when Kamala Harris pointed out that 81 million people had fired him. But what did you make of his January 6th dissembling?
Well, I mean, it was kind of shocking and predictable in that he went straight to blaming Nancy Pelosi and then said, well, I was just asked to make a speech. I just turned up. I mean, I think anybody who recalled January 6th, and regardless of what way you choose to recall it, knows that that wasn't the case. That you know, he wasn't just asked by somebody to make a speech and just turn up. He was advertising it in advance, tweeting out, come and protest, it'll be wild, etc., etc. So it really, I think, fell flat. I think one of the things that we haven't touched on yet is that, and in a way, debates are so much more about the visual cues rather than what the people say. And we saw that with George H.W. Bush, I think, looking at his watch halfway through Clinton, and, you know, things like Al Gore trying to dominate George Bush by going into his space and failing. You know, there are always a lot of visual cues. And Kamala Harris was, I mean, if you studied her, she did two things very well. She kept looking at Trump with this look of incredulity almost, and then perplexed, as if to think, what are you talking about? What are we dealing with here? And there were times where she almost looked at him with pity. And I think, there was no intimidation. She wasn't rattled at all. And I think he stood there, he glowered, he looked down, he puffed and he panted, and he never looked at the people into the TV who were sitting in their living rooms at home watching this. She maintained eye contact with America. She looked into the TV. She said, you, she kept talking about you, as in the people who are out there who are watching. Trump seemed to be just, you know, snarling to himself. He didn't engage with the wider audience at all. And he just came across really as somebody who was very angry and truculent. If I can just pick up a little bit on something Larry said about the moderators, I thought that they did do a good job. And yes, they, Kamala, the reason they fact-checked Trump and not Harris is that he was the one telling the egregious lies that couldn't be allowed to stand. Immigrants are not eating dogs and cats. that's, you know, babies are not executed after birth in America. It was absolutely correct to correct him on those things. But they also let him skate. They asked him, how are you going to do this big immigration deportation plan? How are you going to actually do it to deport 11 million people? He didn't answer that at all. He didn't answer about Ukraine. He didn't answer on Gaza and Israel, I beg your pardon. He wouldn't say if he'd veto a national bill on abortion. So on both sides, they didn't follow up and pin the candidate. Okay. Their colours.
We're running over time, but I do have a last one I want to throw to you, Larry Donnelly, and it's something that happened afterwards. The childless cat lady, Taylor Swift, coming out and endorsing Kamala Harris. Will that have any significance at all?
Yes, I do. I think it will be significant. I think political types are fond of, you know, dismissing those things out of hand. Don't forget, the U.S. is a celebrity-obsessed culture. Don't forget, Taylor Swift has a massive, really adoring and dedicated following. And also, they tend to be apolitical younger people. If this thing is going to be close, and I think it's going to be very close, her messaging to those people, if they, even a few thousand of them here or there turn out in Pennsylvania, Arizona, Georgia, whatever the states might be, if a few thousand of them turn out who wouldn't have voted otherwise, and they tick the box for Harris and Walz, that could potentially be dispositive in this election. So, yeah, it's really significant in my view.
Thank you very much, Larry Donnelly and Marion McKeown of the Business Post.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.